Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome everybody, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, everyone on planet Earth. We come to you again with another episode of With All Dude Respect. That's right, With All Dude Respect. I'm here, Jim Ellis, co-host of the show here on the West Coast. And now we have a pinch hitter on the East Coast. Rick Wright is right now traveling on his bike, I think, with a bunch of friends. So he's busy right now. But we have, replacing him today, Mr. David Plant. David Plant, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine.
Good. Well, I was thinking, you know, when we had this topic for this show, just so everyone knows, David Plant and I were on the same international core team for a men's organization, MDI, Mentor, Discover, Inspire. And so we're dedicated to the truth, telling the truth, having fun, success for men at all levels. So I thought when we had this show title and the show topic, which is celebrating 1 year of sobriety for a gentleman on my men's team, I thought, who could we get? Hey, Rick, who could we get to be on this show? And I thought of David right away. So it's great to have you, David. Have you heard the show before? Or
I have. I have.
Okay. Any comments?
Yeah. The ones that will keep me out of jail or, you know.
Exactly.
I think we're trying to make a big difference in the world, and anybody who's willing to listen and commit to making a difference, I think just helps the entire planet. And, you know, you doing a little bit today, you asking me to do a little bit today, I think it all makes a big difference. So here I am.
Can you tell our audience, because you have a special place in MDI called Special Ops. Can you tell the audience what you do in that arena?
Sure. So my job, my volunteer job, is to find men who want to start men's teams and help them foster and build those teams in their towns. And if you don't know already, you know, MDI is spread out pretty well, but we're concentrated into really seven areas, and that's East Coast, West Coast. There's, you know, some of the areas and a couple places in Canada, and there's a pretty great big clumps of men there. But for the guy who, you know, is down in Florida or in Missouri or in Kansas or, oh my God, I could probably name 1,000 places. You know, there's no men's team there. So we currently work, over the last 2 years, we've built about 15 men's teams all across the U.S. and Canada in some pretty weird and wild places. And, you know, those men all have teams of men in their town that they meet with every week. And my goal in this job, which might take a while, is to be able to look at a map and connect the dots so that no more than an hour away from where you're looking, you know, there's a men's team you can go to and, you know, bring your gift and get what you need. So it's a big feat, but I'm up for the challenge.
Yeah, it's always good to have
somebody asked me a few weeks ago, what's your succession plan? I'm like, dude, I don't have a succession plan. I'm not going anywhere. There's no end limit on this game. This is going to take a long time.
It's like, oh, damn, so, we ran out of men.
I hope that shut him
ran
up.
Out of corners, right.
I wouldn't know what a succession plan would look like, so.
Right on. Well, awesome. That's great. And I just wanted to say if any men are out there listening and like, yeah, a men's team, that sounds like a great idea. You know, fun, camaraderie, success. Kicking each other's ass to make sure we're living the best life. They can go to where should we send them? Which URL?
We should send them to findateam.org. www.findateam.org. It has to be the simplest website to remember in the whole wide world.
That's right.
And if you and if you put in your information to be contacted, I might be one of the people that you talk to.
Okay.
Which is a good or a bad thing, depending on
how
well you know me.
Yeah, we're trying to decide if that scare people off, but that's cool. All right, well, speaking of team, I'm on a men's team in San Diego. It's called Fitness. And there's a man on my team, Scott Lang. And he's been on, I think it's been about 2 years, going on at least a year and a half we've been on the same team. And seeing this man progress, transform before my eyes, he's been a man who is always, you know, transparent. You know, what you see is what you get. And he's made some great strides. And today, I'm going to bring him on right now. So I'll click a button here, bring him on. Today is his anniversary. Mr. Scott Lang, how are you doing today?
Happy anniversary.
What's up,
happy
fellas?
Anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary.
Yes. So what anniversary is this, Mr. Lang?
Today is day one of my second year of sobriety. So it's my first anniversary.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah,
did you get a... go ahead.
It's been a crazy ride, let me tell you.
That's why we're having the show. We want to hear a little bit about the ride. But first, now, do you get a token? Do you still get a token for that?
Or yeah, you know, here we go. I guess my program hasn't been a traditional, classical, if you will, program. And there's not a, I don't have a quote-unquote home group for my recovery program. I probably should. My therapist would say, get one for sure. I'll have to admit, certainly, that I probably stand a better chance of long-term sobriety if I ultimately do find what's called a home group, a circle of men and women and or women that, you know, meet once a week. In, you know, there's Alcoholics Anonymous, there's Marijuana Anonymous, there's Narcotics Anonymous, there's an anonymous for almost anything you can imagine. And I would be well advised and have been advised and I would do well to take that advice. But in those circles, to answer your question finally, yes, I would receive, if I had a circle like that, I would receive a token, a coin, if you will, that represents 1 year. I think they do 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, and then some places do 18 months, but then every anniversary year thereafter, you get a coin.
Okay, and what sobriety are we talking about at this juncture? What are we sobriety?
Yeah, for me, my drugs of choice that I'm enjoying 1 year of sobriety is are alcohol and marijuana.
Okay.
And I would say not in that order. Marijuana would definitely be my drug of choice, with alcohol having been, I have a much longer relationship with alcohol, but once I'm a jerk when I drink, and when I use marijuana, I'm less of a jerk. I tend to be happier, act in a happy, carefree way when under the influence of marijuana, and with alcohol, I tend to get defensive and mean and bitter and angry. So when I found marijuana after years of drinking, I was elated, literally, and it didn't take me long to ditch alcohol. And then after I got so addicted to marijuana that I was partaking it so frequently that it wasn't producing the desired effect, I began drinking as well, so that the combined effect of the two would have a greater effect of either one by itself.
So, and what is the emotion today? Like, it's a 1 year. Does it feel like an anniversary? Do you feel what's the emotion right now?
Yeah, the emotion is I'm pumped up. I mean, even though it's only a year, on the one hand, it's a really long time, and on the other hand, it's really not very long at all. And today, the emotion is I feel good about having done what feels like a long period of time, even though in my back of my mind I also know that I have a long way to go still. I feel great. You know, I woke up this morning and my wife ended up calling in sick today because she had an issue that she probably could have worked, but she didn't. So she took my daughter to school today, which I normally do. I got to sleep in, and she came home and we got to have some celebratory lovemaking. So I got to kick my day off in a very rewarding fashion. And I've reached out to some people, you know, close to me in my life to inform them. Those who didn't know, a lot of people did, but those who didn't know now do know, and I've been getting some congratulations, and it just feels really good. It feels like I tell you, when it was day one and day two and day three, it felt like this huge burden, this huge weight, this endless time frame that just seemed like totally impossible. And even a month, 2 months, 3 months, even with the momentum, I thought, man, how do people get multiple years, even a year or multiple years under their belt? And to be able to look back and say, this is the longest I've been sober probably ever. I mean, yeah, as long as I can remember. The last time I attempted to get sober, I had about nine months, where I was able to abstain, and then I fell back into my addiction, and for another year and a half, deep into my addiction until I finally quit last May.
So what caused you to I think the term is relapse. The first time.
Yeah, I think. Well, yes and no. I mean, my wife was out of town. I remember the specific events. It's probably a bigger answer than just the events that I'm going to list, though, and I'll try and come to that when I through this process. But my wife was out of town. It was my fantasy baseball season, and I'm a big fantasy baseball guy. And every year, I typically fly out to the East Coast and do a fantasy baseball draft. And I drink pretty heavily when I go to do that, so I associate my fantasy baseball draft with drinking. And I just thought to myself, oh, it's no big deal. Let me just celebrate. I've got 9 months, right? I can just have one day here for my fantasy baseball draft and just celebrate and leave it at that. And shortly after that, I'm like, well, maybe just one more time, maybe just once a week. And then it was, okay, well, maybe twice a week, you know, weekends only. And then it was, well, you know, okay, maybe it's weekends plus one night a week, you know, weeknight. And then it was, okay, as long as it's only at night after everybody's in bed and after work is done, then it's okay. And then it became every night. And then it became, well, I don't feel very good this morning. I need a little pick-me-up. So then it became mornings. And it was this slippery slope that pretty quickly turned into all day, every day, again. So I think it was a belief, you know, that I had this voice in my head, and I still hear it sometimes, that I should be able to control it. I can control this. I will be stronger if I'm able to exercise control by being able to moderate. That's going to be – I'll be a stronger man if I'm able to moderate, because abstaining is a sign of weakness. It's like, oh, if you have to abstain, then you must not be able to have control over it, right? So there's this voice trying to convince me that the manly way and the only real way to control it is to be able to moderate, not abstain. And I still hear that voice.
That's interesting, because I've never heard that sentiment before. That's interesting about control. Is that pretty common?
So what do
you
do?
That, David?
Right. So, I mean, what do you do when you hear that voice now?
Well, I've had that voice over and over, and I have repeated experiences now, multiple experiences, a long line of repetitive failures of, well, I can't moderate it. I have not been able to successfully moderate after numerous attempts. And so it's a belief that, you know, maybe I could, I guess, but I certainly haven't been able to this far, and there's zero evidence to that I could point to that would allow me to convince anyone, including myself, that it would be possible moving forward.
Hmm.
I mean, just over and over, failure. You know, just I'll quit, and then 2 days later, I'm digging through the trash to get all my paraphernalia that I threw away 3 days ago. Because, oh, yeah, just today, and then, oh, yeah, just tomorrow, and it just, there has been no moderation. And, you know, my personality is, I'm not a real good, you know, moderation is something I probably need to apply to other areas of my life. You know, I sort of do things in binges when we get a half gallon of chocolate ice cream in the house, I mean, it's gone in about a day and a half. I don't have a little dish here and a little dish there. I consume it. I inhale it. No pun intended.
Right. So what, I'm curious, I imagine, you know, people who drink or people who do, you know, marijuana and things like that, there's a sense of recreation and fun for certain people, I imagine. And then at some point, in a life where there's maybe addiction involved or out of control, there's some kind of harm that's happening, some kind of harm. In your past, was it ever just fun, and did it become harmful, or was it always harmful and you didn't know it, and what actually is the harm?
Yeah, it was fun. I can't pinpoint right now off the top of my head when it stopped being fun. But I can tell you what changed. I just can't precisely say when that change happened. What changed was how I felt when I was under the influence. It went from being fun to feeling guilty. And it went from being a social activity to being an activity that I did by myself. I didn't socially get high anymore. I would only get high in secret. You know, I'd be high all the time. So I'd be in social situations, but I wouldn't, you know, I'd be high going to that situation, going to that event. I'd sneak away at the event to get high. I'd come home and get high. So it was just this thing I did in secret, and it definitely played on my conscience, and it played, you know, deep down I knew I was not living in integrity. You know, it was like living two lives. And trying to be one person in front of people and another person sort of behind the curtain, if you will.
So,
and so I got real tired.
So I'm guessing you probably go to, actually, I shouldn't guess. So what do you do to stay sober?
Right now I'm still avoiding a lot of things. I did not go to my fantasy baseball draft this year. I specifically and proactively did not go. I avoid, you know, I'm less social these days. I don't attend certain things. We had a function a couple of weeks back. In fact, our men's division had an event where, you know, we had a beer brewing competition between teams. And after one of the meetings concluded, we concluded the meeting, and there was some beer. And I could have showed up and decided not to. I still participated in other ways. With their skits and food and things, but you know, I avoided it. So people, places, and things. I don't hang around people that drink and get high. I don't go to events where I'm pretty certain there's going to be people drinking and getting high. So right now it's pretty much avoidance. And
right.
I hope and believe with time that I'll be stronger and I'll be able to go back to my fantasy baseball draft and resist the urge and feel and have fun and still enjoy my time there and occasions like that.
And do you go to AA or anything like that?
Well, I currently, Kaiser Permanente has an awesome called CDRP, Chemical Dependency Recovery Program, that I participate in, and I have a therapist I see there. And I used to go to different classes and different meetings there. I still see my therapist regularly, but where my recovery program is today, that's pretty much it. And that's why I was mentioning before, it probably would be a good idea for me to incorporate a recovery meeting, a regular one, at least one, into my schedule. I would be I would be well suited.
So you're also on a men's team, right?
I am.
Yeah, so an MDI on a men's team, and not to deflate what AA does, because they've successfully figured out how to do this and are wildly successful at it and are huge at doing it. How has being on a men's team helped you in your recovery? What's different?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, I stepped up to be team leader, I don't know, 6-8 months before ultimately deciding to go to a 60-day residential rehab facility, or, you know, a live-in rehab facility. And when I stepped up to be team leader, it was really, you know, there was this internal struggle going on where I'm like, I knew I needed a change in my life. I just wasn't sure what it was and how I would get there. But I knew by being team leader that I would get a lot of focus and attention and support, and the spotlight would be on me. And ultimately through that experience, because I've been team leader in the past, that I would have an opportunity to, you know, overcome some barriers. I would have barriers thrown in front of me that would, I would have an opportunity to either succumb to or overcome. And, you know, I even, when I stepped up to volunteer as, you know, a team leader option, you know, we were going through the team leader selection process, I even said that, I'm like, I'm going to do this because I need your help and I need the team. You know, I'm not in a great place and I really need this. It wasn't a place of like, oh, I want to serve the men. It was like, no, I need the men to serve me. I really need this big time. And so they were very instrumental in, you know, that process, simply by me being team leader and having, you know, how I'm showing up be reflected back to me on a regular basis. And ultimately, you know, May 19th last year, I said, enough's enough. And June 1st is when I headed off to what's called Whiteside. It's in Riverside, California, and it's a residential recovery program, you know, treatment, 60-day program. So the men's team was very instrumental in getting me to that point.
Yeah. And would you say that your favorite teammate is Jim, or... Or no. No, that's a joke. So I'm on the same
did
team.
Did Jim get you a 1-year token for today? Cuz you know, if you would have told me about this sooner, I'd be your favorite teammate, cuz that's what that's what men on teams do.
Right. So how did, it's weird cuz I'm on the team, so I can kind of comment, but I actually want to ask a question of, did you feel the support of us while you were gone? And gone meaning when you were at rehab. You were rehab for how long was it? How long were you in
60
rehab?
Days.
So what was
2 months.
The support? What did it look like or feel like when you were not physically on the team? Was there any sense of support there?
I mean, there was, but there's limited, you know, when you're in a place like that, there's limited availability of telephones and internet. So, you know, they really want to cut you off from the world to keep your focus on the program and keep your focus on the recovery. So there was limited opportunity to be able to receive and or reach out. But I did take some of those opportunities, and yeah, men did reach out to me, and I did take the opportunity to call in to team meetings a couple of times. I don't remember how many, one or two maybe. To call in and check in at team meetings and let men know how I'm doing, and you know, just to hear the men's voices and hear their, I could hear the smiles on their faces. I mean, it felt, I could hear it through the phone. I could feel their support. I could feel their love, and you know, it felt good to stay connected, even though it wasn't, you know, daily or weekly. It was, you know, maybe monthly. I still felt it for sure.
What I love about the men's circle that you know, I'm a part of is there's really no rescue that goes on. Like, we can't rescue anyone. We can't make any man do anything. But if that man has any drive and vision and dream and goals, we're there. you know, we're very present, and it's not really a rescue that goes on. But Lang, you are so dedicated that you know, it's very easy to support you, and I'm so glad that so happy for you that you made the decision and that you've come this far. Can I ask you about what did? Let me ask. It's been 1 year today, and what actually happened 1 year ago? What was the turning point that made it stick?
Yeah, it wasn't really an event, you know. Some people hit their bottoms by getting in an accident or getting arrested or getting fired from their jobs or getting, you know, their husband or wife leaving them. I've heard lots of stories like that. Mine was really just more of this, I'm so freaking tired of being tired. Like, I was just worn out. It was living two lives. Living one life is tiring enough. Living two was just completely unsustainable. And I didn't like who I saw in the mirror. I was totally fed up with who I saw, how I felt. And I was just tired. I'm like, this is not how to live. This is not how to live life. This sucks. This totally sucks. And it was just, you know, that was my bottom. And, you know, even when I first walked into Kaiser again for the second time, back in early May, I was still using, you know, and I reluctantly quit. My therapist was like, you just need to take 14 days off. Like, do it, because I can't sign this paperwork for you to go to rehab unless you do it. I'm like, I'm not going to rehab. And he's like, well, I suggest you go to rehab. I'm like, ah, rehab's for losers. And, you know, I guess the thing I started doing was I started listening to advice from the right people. And the therapist said, you should go. And I didn't want to, but I went. And he said, you should stay for 60 days. And I'm like, I'm only going to do 30. And he's like, you should stay for 60. And I did. And by the end of the 60th day, I was wishing I could stay another 30. But it would have costed more money than I had to continue. Kaiser has a very generous program as far as that goes. So couldn't afford to stay any longer. But I'm glad I listened, you know, to the advice of him.
Awesome. Well, you're definitely a man who plays full out. So if you're going to be into an addiction, you're going to play that full out. And
I did.
In your sobriety, and you're really going for, you know, and I've seen you on Facebook doing the different things you do now, the choir, and so it's very inspiring, you know, great to be on your team. We're rapidly running out of time, but I did want to ask one question, and then David, if you have another one. So my question is, because there's a lot of people, not just men, a lot of people in your position that you were a year and a half ago listening to this voice, yeah, I could do that, yeah, I need to be in control, and then maybe in their addiction, and there's all different types of addictions. So what would the man you are right now say to the man you were like a year and a half ago? What any words from your heart, gut, say to that man?
I think, yeah, listen to your gut. Don't listen to your head. You know, your head will talk you into or out of anything. But, you know, listen to your gut. If your gut says you need help, you need help, right? If that's what your gut says, that you're done, that this isn't for you, that you're tired, that's what your gut is saying. Stop rationalizing. Stop listening to your brain. Stop listening to the chatter in your head. And go get some help.
Awesome. Anything else, David, before we wrap it up?
Yeah. So I just want to let you know that in my humble opinion, and what the hell do I know, you weren't lucky. What you did took balls. And I know that, you know, women do this too, and they go through this, and they don't have balls and whatever their equivalent is to doing that. But in your particular case, I just want to acknowledge you. It took balls to do what you did to bring you to where you are today. And I don't have any addictions, but I'm sitting here wondering why I don't have the ball sometimes to do what you just did. So thanks for being an example of the type of person who can go after what he wants and not let anything or anybody stand in his way. I'm just amazed. Thank you.
Thank you for saying that, David. And, you know, I guess I haven't really mentioned this yet, and I want to make sure I do, is it wasn't me. I mean, there's no way by myself that this would have happened. It is for sure my higher power that this was divine intervention. Like, this was God saying, you know, I'm going to help you, you know, and that came in the form of a men's team. It came in the form of a therapist that is just a man. Came in the form of a supportive family. Came in the form of a lot of different ways. And ultimately, yes, I did have to make the decision, but it was a lot of reluctant decisions, you know, just like, okay, I'll just listen to my higher powers, listen to, you know, people around me that have my best interests in mind, people that know better. So this would not have happened if God had not intervened in my life.
And I don't disagree with you at all. I'm just acknowledging the part that you took when you said, maybe I should listen.
Yeah, for sure.
That, to me, that takes balls. So,
awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. Appreciate that. Yeah,
yeah.
Thank you.
So inspiration to all of us to listen to our higher power, our higher self, be open. I think I understand the rumor is that there's an answer like every moment that's right there if we're just open to it. So great job, Mr. Lang. Happy anniversary. I'll be there continual throughout the time. And thanks for being on our show. We're already done with time. So I just want to remind the audience to find us. You can go to Facebook. Yes. Rick Wright and I created Facebook.com just so you could find our page, With All Dude Respect. With All Dude Respect. Type that into the search. You can find us. Follow us. That's great. Hey, thanks, David, for pitch hitting for Mr. Wright. Awesome job.
Anytime.
And Mr. Lang, let's go celebrate, huh?
Appreciate this opportunity. This was an awesome way to celebrate is by being on with you two men today. Thank you for the time and the care.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, audience. We'll see you next week on With All Dude Respect.